Hello everyone, and welcome to another podcast from CEDILE, the Center for Foreign Language Teaching. It's my pleasure to welcome once again Karin Lichtenauer from the University of Geneva and Laura Loder-Büchel from the Zurich University of Teacher Education. Together, Karin and Laura are editing a second issue of the journal Babylonia. This issue again looks at museums as resources for language teaching and learning. Welcome to both of you, and we look forward to hearing more about this second issue of Babylonia on museums. To begin with, could you put this issue in context? How did it come about? Who is it aimed at?
Well, because there was such a wonderful response to the first issue, we decided to have a second issue on the topic of museums. And so in the first issue, we went all around the world and looked at topics such as immersive language experiences. We made audio guides and language lessons, and we looked at the role of simplified text, as well as we peeked into many specific museums throughout the world, like the role of the languages in the First Nations of Canada. So in this issue, we mostly have more concrete experiences from museums for language teaching that can be used with school classes. And it's a bit more concrete and in terms of instructional design.
Okay, as I could read in the introduction of this issue, it really contained a wide variety of teaching ideas for different school levels and for different foreign languages. Could you give our listeners a closer look at one or two articles?
Well, I think for me, I was really moved by Tom Meyer and Beth Clark-Gareca's article on visual thinking strategies. Perhaps our readers have heard of Harvard's Project Zero visual thinking strategy tools. And many of us know Think, Pair, Share. But in this case, we have See, Think, Wonder, using really powerful photographs from protests that speak to learners immigrating from various countries. So the reader learns how to use this tool as a means of embracing multilingualism and provoking deep thought with relatively simple language. And so we see examples from a group of Spanish-speaking immigrants in the U.S., but this activity can be used for heritage or foreign language teaching in Switzerland, and it connects well to the visual literacy aims of public schools and also the many museums we have in Switzerland.
Yeah, well, there is also the Mittenland project by Sabine Christopher and Barbara Sumensi. It's based on plurilingual approaches. And what I liked about it, that it brings a new light on language teaching in museums. There, it's not expected that students from Ticino know enough German before they go to the museum and talk about what they see. But on the contrary, the museum is an opportunity to discover what they already know, like complete beginners, but they already know some things from their other languages, from their environment. And there is to discover, it's more to discover that, what they already have, to get a first contact with the language and the culture of the neighbors.
And in the last podcast, you mentioned the disproportionate representation of the various national languages in Swiss museums. How are different languages represented in the contributions of this issue?
Well, we have quite a few contributions in Italian, for example, and we have Barbara Sumensi, as Karin mentioned above, who's actually going to be at the Conference on Multilingualism in CORE presenting later in the year.
This number includes also classical languages, because Latin and Old Greek are also taught in Swiss schools. It's very interesting to see how museums can make these languages and the cultures of antique speakers alive. It's fascinating to see how literature and archaeological artifacts can be brought together to give us a better idea of a disappeared world and give us another access to the way people used to think.
That's an interesting point, museums to access Latin and Old Greek. And now to conclude, from your perspective as publisher and educationalist, what are the opportunities and limitations of the museum context for language learning?
Well, if we think a little bit about the future of language education, I don't necessarily want to see learners on their tablets, you know, for these lessons. They can do that at home. And maybe it's to rethink the school day and how it might look different. Maybe it would be better to have, for example, an hour or so every morning of passive adaptive instruction using their computers, but the rest of the day doing things. And so field trips and visits to museums are things that some children do not get to do with their own families. For example, I remember being forced to go to the Smithsonian as a child, and I hated it at the time, but I was really thankful for the opportunity my relatively poor public school provided to me, actually, later in life. I was really thankful for that. So there are no limitations. A museum can be used concretely for planning how to plan a trip. That's a valuable skill in and of itself. Where are we going? How do we get there? What train do we take? What should we bring to eat? And then there's the content of the museum, art, history, biology, and more. And then there's the functional thank you letter to the guide. There's the report of the day. There's the marketing feature, like make a TikTok to sell the museum. And honestly, an action-oriented approach like this, in my humble opinion, is the direction that public schools should be taking. Away from closed exercises of controlled nature, so discrete items, to open life experiences broken down into meaningful pieces, sort of integrative teaching.
Well, I also see more opportunities than limitations. Students of secondary schools, I mean, they get opportunities as well to widen their knowledge on many topics. They dive into new worlds and have an opportunity to choose and also to take time. I believe it's important to leave the students a certain freedom when visiting a museum. They can choose their favorite object among many. They can choose not to look at everything into detail. They can choose the exhibits they will want to spend more time with and how they will spend time with it. There's nothing new in saying that you learn better when you're a master of your own learning. And museums, well, they offer so many opportunities for individual variation. I've just read about two projects that will be published in SMILE. In both projects, the students said how they appreciated, I mean, the school students, they were around 15, 16, how they appreciate the quietness and the peacefulness of working in a museum region class. Also, because they've learned there to feel legitimate about being in a museum. They also experienced making art, drawing, writing within the museum, and they enjoyed that very much. That's another important aspect of museums, as we saw in the first number, to open the doors of these temples of culture to everyone and to show the way in to the younger ones, as Laura just said. But the greatest opportunity that students do have something to say or to write. They react to the exhibit, to the authors or the artists. They communicate not only to give an answer to the questions who were asked, but because they want to say something. Of course, you can also do that in class. But museums, maybe because they are not school, they provoke the willingness to express their own thoughts.
Yeah, what you said is really important, Karin, because it made me think about the fight I have with my students about SMART goals. You know, they always want to have these very SMART goals. And I always think of these SMART goals are stupid because they say that they should only, for example, test what they teach. So they're limiting what's in the classroom to things that they teach in the classroom. For example, controlled things like cotton candy or the word donkey. There's no individualization and no valuing the fact that we need to teach learners to learn outside of the classroom walls. And that is part of a teacher's job and should be reflected in the classroom. So when you send them to a museum, they can do all these interpretations and then they can bring it back into the classroom. So going to a museum teaches learners to learn wherever they are and bringing this back into the classroom in the form of a report, a creative task, a reflection, and this individualizes language learning and takes the focus off of things like cotton candy or donkey and onto extramural learning.
But I must say, I also see some limitations, but like on the organizational part, actually. You know, the school days are organized so that students have to jump from one subject to the next all time. And of course, there is a price also to pay to enter the museums, even though they are reduced for classes. And, you know, you may have to organize parents to accompany the group or whatever. That would be the problem, I would say, in bringing the kids more to museums within when they should be sitting at school, so to say. But fortunately, we see that many teachers don't stop in front of these difficulties and still organize everything so they can bring their classes a bit around in the world. So it's very good.
Thank you, Laura and Karine, for all these interesting insights about museums and language learning. And dear Cedil podcast listeners, we invite you to discover the new issue of Babylonia, the volume 2 of the year 2023.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.